From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Ledson. The number of Americans with COVID-19 keeps growing. Dr. Nick Mark is treating more and more of them.
Some of these patients are very sick. Their lungs can't transport enough oxygen into the bloodstream, so we have to use machines and other therapies to support them.
He's in Seattle, where the first known U.S. case appeared. But figuring out how to treat the disease means doctors are improvising, because it's brand new.
When something is new, you don't know exactly how to treat it. And so we're doing a lot of learning. Every one of these patients is teaching us more. Some of the things we've learned are we've learned that they seem to respond well to certain settings on the ventilator. There's certain ways to ventilate them that work better than others. We're also learning that there are important strategies to protect ourselves.
So there are a lot of doctors comparing notes around the country. And I mean, it's almost like they're crowdsourcing the information. You posted on Twitter a one-page guide to how to treat COVID-19 in the intensive care unit. What do doctors not know?
So there's a lot of things we don't know. And that's actually, that was the motivation for me to put that together. Mm-hmm. I think for me personally, feeling like I don't know what's going on makes me feel very out of control. And that's a very scary feeling. And one of the ways that I confront that is by reading everything that I could about this. And then I just sort of boiled that down, distilled it to its essence, one page, which I shared with colleagues. And it's been an amazing crowdsourcing effort. I think, now we've got it in 9 or 10 languages, which is pretty exciting.
So what kind of questions are you hearing from other doctors?
So one of the biggest unknowns about this is we know how to take care of people with respiratory failure, but we don't know how to treat COVID specifically. There's a lot of therapies that have been tried in China and in the rest of the world. So for example, there's a HIV medication called lopinavir, ritonavir, which has been used. There's anti-inflammatory medicines. There's a new antiviral medication called remdesivir. All of these are being tried. We don't know yet which of these is best, which of these work, which patients it's best to use which medication in.
Are patients being put at risk by trying these different therapies?
So, I think at this point we're doing the best we can to give people the best chance of recovery. So people who are very sick from COVID are being treated with medications that may be effective based on the experience elsewhere in the world, but aren't proven yet. Mm-hmm. This is moving so fast; we just don't have time to wait for large clinical trials to be done. In many cases, we know that these drugs are safe because they're drugs that have been used for other conditions, but what we don't know is how effective are they. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of confusing guidance out there for everybody for regular life, but it also seems like doctors are getting mixed messages, even different guidance from, for example, the Centers for Disease Control, the World Health Organization, local health departments. And the World Health Organization said the virus isn't airborne, but there's research that says that's the opposite. I mean, how do we know it's true?
Yeah, that's a big challenge. One of the biggest, scary things is a lack of information, not knowing definitively some of these key things about it. You mentioned the question of airborne versus droplet spread. And there's definitely conflicting messages going around. There's definitely conflicting policies. Some hospitals are telling workers that it's spread by droplets, so you don't need to wear the more sophisticated masks. Mm-hmm. But we don't know if that is as good. There may be some added risk there.
So we obtained some internal communication from a medical organization in Seattle mm-hmm. that explicitly tells staff to say nothing to friends and family and direct them to the organization's website. Do you think that information should be curtailed?
I think, it's really hard when you have loved ones who are worried about you to not tell them what's going on.
Yeah.
I understand that hospitals want to control information, and I think that makes sense. I don't think it's like a cover-up. I think they're just trying to speak with one voice. That said, it's really hard. I think you want to avoid misinformation, but you don't want to shut down communication altogether. I think that's probably not, A, that's not going to work. And B, that's not that's not really, you know, who we are.
Yeah. So those internal communications that we obtained, they also gave staff guidance about testing that had no special consideration for possible exposure. This is for frontline medical staff who we know are at high risk of exposure. There's a doctor in Seattle on a ventilator now with coronavirus. What do you want as far as the guidelines for medical staff?
That's a great question. So, yeah, as you said, I mean, a colleague of mine is on a ventilator in the hospital where he works right now. Many other friends and colleagues have had close calls and have gotten tested or are getting tested because they were potentially exposed. Every single one of those is horrible, nerve-wracking experience. And, you know, we need clear guidance for when to do that. The guidance has changed a lot. You know, who to get tested, when to isolate yourself. We just don't have a great sense of all of that yet.
How have you handled the risk personally for yourself and your family?
So that's one of the worst parts of this, frankly. You know, one of the nice things about critical care is that even though it's very intense work, you can leave a lot of that stress at the door. But when you worry about literally taking the disease home with you, it's hard to do that. So my wife and I have had a lot of what-if conversations. We've had conversations with our friends who are also doctors, who also have kids, about, you know, if we were sick, if we were incapacitated, you know, could you take our kids and vice versa? Mm-hmm. I also have a bit of a ritual of taking off my scrubs in the garage, washing hands, just doing everything I can to prevent bringing this home with me. And then being as careful as I possibly can be at work.
Yeah. You've contributed to a guide for medical folks about how to communicate with the public. It's one about tough conversations like this one. Why can't my grandma get into ICU? Are you discriminating against her because she's old? We're hearing doctors say that if they have to choose who to put on ventilators, that they need to choose people who will likely come out of it well. What do you say to that grandmother?
So, you know, I should say a couple of things to sort of preface this. This is just ICU care in general. There's a lot of things mm-hmm. that we can do, but they're not always a good idea to do, right? Doing everything for everybody is not always the right thing. In this case, it's even harder because COVID seems to disproportionately cause severe illness in older people and in people who have medical comorbidity. So people who are already going into this at a disadvantage. Mm-hmm. And that's tough. You know, there have been just heart-wrenching accounts from Italy about not having nearly enough ventilators and having to give them to only a select few. I want to reassure your listeners that's not the situation in Seattle, mm-hmm. but we're all worried that it could be. You know, we're not at the peak of this yet. It looks like based on the numbers, they're about 10 days ahead, and our numbers are tracking exactly with where theirs were 10 days ago.
That's a hard answer to hear because what's going on in Italy is really heartbreaking.
It is, yeah. And we often think about limited resources in terms of machines, beds, but the most valuable resource in the hospital is the people who know how to use those machines and know how to take care of people in the beds. And, you know, one of the things that I worry about is not just that the amazing ICU nurses and respiratory therapists and other support staff are going to get sick, but they're going to get tired. They're going to get burnt out.
Yeah.
This is likely to be a marathon, not a sprint. And we're probably on like mile 2 or mile 3 of it.
Dr. Mark, this was a great conversation, but very sobering.
Yeah. Can I say something else real quick?
Please, please.
I think, you know, this is a really important thing to remember, right? Because this is scary. You know, this is a disease that you can get from somebody else. This is an infectious disease. But I think it's really important to remember the, you know, shared humanity, that the people who have this are people. That's important for us in the hospital to remember that these people are profoundly afraid. They're hearing about how terrible and scary this virus is. They're cut off. In many cases, we don't let them have visitors because we don't want to spread this. So people are in a room with no support from their family. Everybody who comes in is scared to be there, and they're wearing protective equipment. You know, remembering like what these people are going through is really important. And I think anything that we can do to be compassionate to them, whether it's, you know, helping them FaceTime with their loved ones so they can have some contact, or whether it's just as healthcare providers spending an extra minute or two, you know, putting your hand on somebody's shoulder. Little things like that, I think, are really important now. I mean, those things are always important, but I think they're especially important when people are feeling as scared and isolated as they are with this.
Yeah. Dr. Nick, man, thank you for your work on the front lines and taking time to talk to us.
Thanks for having me.
Nick Mark is a critical care specialist in Seattle. While we're in the coronavirus crisis, just like everyone has to make a shift, here at Reveal, so do we. That means we're delaying the release of our first serial project, American Rehab. We'd originally planned to launch it next week. It's about another public health crisis, drug addiction in America. We investigate drug rehab programs that are putting people to work without paying them. Tens of thousands of people a year are affected. It's important reporting and some of the best radio we've ever made, but the timing just isn't right. So for now, we'll cover the coronavirus and continue to bring you other in-depth investigative stories you've come to rely on us for, like our next story. The president has compared fighting the coronavirus with going to war. In a moment, we look back at the Iraq War and one man's effort to seek justice from his American interrogators at Abu Ghraib prison. You're listening to Reveal.
Support for Reveal is from LegalZoom. It's important to set up your business the right way. LegalZoom's network of independent attorneys can answer questions and provide legal advice. To learn more, go to LegalZoom.com.